Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Moments ago, the Australian Open women's title was decided, and it has gone to Naomi Osaka in a thrilling final, following a thrilling final of three sets, 7-6, 5-7, 6-4 over Petra Kvitova. And that does not do it justice because of the ups and downs and the feelings and the emotions and the stress and the brilliant shot making that we've just witnessed. And here on the Tennis Podcast, myself, David Law, Catherine Whittaker, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Grad Matt, how are you?
Hello, very well, thank you.
I think we're uplifted. I am. What are you?
Well, I mean, a slightly unfortunate state of speechlessness from a podcast perspective.
Yeah, I saw a tweet like that from Grad Matt earlier on, and I'm thinking, how's this going to work on the pod?
Yeah, well, it just blew me away, the whole match. Yeah. It was just one of those evenings, wasn't it? The sky was immense, and the tennis just sort of matched it. It was just the perfect evening.
If you'd like to see the immenseness of it, the sky, go to our Instagram page where Catherine Whittaker is shown taking a selfie.
A bit meta. It's someone taking a picture of me taking a picture.
But it kind of sums it up. It was an incredible night's entertainment and sport. And it really is hard to feel completely good about the person that has won it, simply because it means that one of them is feeling miserable right now, and that's Petra Kvitova. As a match itself, one thing I'd forgotten, and I'm going to just get this in early because that's why I lost my prediction, which I said would be straight sets for Petra Kvitova, I completely forgot how good Naomi Osaka is at getting behind a tennis ball. Partly because of since she started working with Sacha Bayen, I feel that's one of the things that he seems to have got her doing, the ability to just get in behind a ball no matter how hard it is struck and be able to absorb it.
Do you mean movement?
Yeah, the movement. Right. And also she gets low to the ground. You never feel like she dials it in. She never dials a point in, just kind of puts a racket out there. You know, she's trying to get her feet in position so she's behind the ball no matter where it is on the court, and so that she can properly deal with it. It's full commitment all the time.
Yeah, and she makes it look like time is sort of suspended, like she just, Andy Murray does that sometimes, or used to do that, makes it look like they just, time's a bit slower at their end of the court than it is at the opponent's.
But I never really thought, you know, when I remember when you alerted me to Naomi Osaka before I ever saw her, I think you were at an event or you saw her play and you just waxed on about how good she was and what we'd got in our midst here, probably 2 or 3 years ago.
I think it was when she won the Singapore Rising Stars. They used to do sure they still do it, or whether Shenzhen will continue to do it, alongside the WTA finals. They used to do a Rising Stars event for I think it was under 20s, but she was 18 at most then, and she won that event, and I think that was where I saw her, because I was there that year and I saw her up close.
I've then since seen her a few times and just been taken by her serve and the power of her ground strokes. It's only in the last 6 months that I don't know whether it's new or whether it's only just it's me who hadn't noticed it before, the way she commits in rallies now and how hard she is to beat. And that explains, I would have thought, how she managed to mount those comebacks that she had earlier in this tournament, and then suddenly playing a brilliant match against Pliskova. But, you know, this was Kvitova playing well, and she still didn't win. How often does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, Naomi Osaka is so much more than just a clean hitter of the tennis ball. She, as you said, the movement, her ability to sense a moment and to rise to it, and it's those abilities which have taken her to this next level. You know, she was already a good player, but in the last 6 months, she has become just an absolute superstar, an absolute force in this game, who you just sort of expect to deliver in these big moments. And that's why, for me, that the way that second set turn was so shocking, so unbelievable, because I just did not see that wobble coming.
So how much of that wobble was her and how much of it was Kvitova?
I think it was a bit of both. I think the analogy I like to use is a tennis player is kind of pushing a ball up a hill, and they have to get the ball right to the top of the hill as much as they can and keep it there. But if they just lose it, it falls down the other end of the hill. And that's a little bit what happened with Osaka. Games started slightly to just run away from her, I thought, and the errors came a little bit. But at the same time, Petra Kvitova did so well to hold from love 40 down and took it to Osaka, and Osaka felt that pressure, I think, coming from the other end of the court. So, and there was I think there was a double fault in there from Osaka. So it was definitely a combination of the two, as it often is, I think, when there's such a huge disparity in the number of games in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it's that interaction between the it's that perfect interaction of the mental and the physical and the skillful, right? You don't know where one thing ends and the other begins. And there's no doubt something mental happened to Naomi Osaka. You know, she went off court at the end of that set, and she came back. She has that big tell where she, like a little, it's so childlike the way she sort of squishes her visor and pulls it down over her eyes, as if like, oh, maybe you all can't see that I'm upset if I do that. And it's
which
just,
she did in the US Open final presentation,
yeah,
didn't she?
Exactly. Yep. So there's no doubt she was feeling it, but the. And she does have this sort of, I hate the word sulky, because it's a bit like bossy, really. It's quite gendered, isn't it? But she does sometimes have this slightly sulky looking face on the court. And she, you know, that loss to Lisha Sorenko in the semi-final in Brisbane, I'm not sure she would have come through tonight if it hadn't been for that loss. And the way she reflected upon it so quickly and with such visceral honesty and self-awareness, and clearly learnt from it. I mean, Sasha Bayern that I spoke to yesterday, he talks a lot about her ability to learn from things, but to learn from something that big in the space of 3 weeks while a Grand Slam tournament is happening, blimey, amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
And I feel like her attitude tonight and throughout this fortnight is as perfect as you could get, really, particularly for a young player who hasn't been through every experience yet. She's learning as she goes, and she just stays in the moment. She doesn't seem to tail off in the way that you talk about getting to the top of the mountain and then, oh my goodness, she's over the edge, and then there's no coming back. She kept on getting back to the here and now, and when she went off the court after that second set, she came back and immediately she was back in the room. You know, she was really ready to go, hard drive wiped, and let's do it. It was fantastic to watch, actually. That, and I suppose that's another part of the maturing process. I mean, goodness me, she has an appetite for the sport generally, and that's why I think she could end up going on to do such great things in the future as well. But it was on its own merits, that match was just a joy to watch.
That analogy of yours, Matt, is so fantastic, because how many, I mean, not just in this tournament, but there just happened to have been quite a few notable examples in this tournament of really tight first sets or second sets and then runaway deciding sets or final sets. You know, Kvitova against Collins in the semi-final, tiebreak first set, and then it was 6-love, I think, in the second. You know, 6-love final set, Nadal Tsitsipas. The Svitolina Osaka match was similar. I think it was 6-1 in the deciding set. It's just real nail on the head analogy.
What you really want in this sort of match, when it's built the way it is and it lines up, and you just think, surely that's going to be a good match. Surely that's going to be three sets. Surely they're both going to play well, because they can't be playing this well running in and then not deliver. And then they did. And then they did even more so. You know, it really kind of had everything, the match, because the tennis on show was off the scale in terms of quality. I don't think I expected, when I made my prediction, that Kvitova would win in two. I just didn't see how Kvitova could play that well and not win. And she did play well.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but my overwhelming emotion at the end of that second set was gratitude to Petra Kvitova for extending it into a final set. It's all very well us as neutrals just wanting as much of the match as possible, but I really, really did. I felt like she'd done us all a personal favour.
Don't think Naomi Osaka was thinking that.
Yeah, but no, she wasn't. But
but it makes it all the sweeter, doesn't it? I don't know. I mean, it's quite funny when you ask Roger Federer, would you like to win in a classic that everybody remembers, or would you like to win in three straight sets, you know, easily? And he always says, well, I'd like to win easily.
Well, thanks. It's funny, though. Right. I mean, we'll come on to this later when we preview the men's final, but I've got a feeling that Djokovic wants another 5-hour 53. Yeah. I've got a feeling that he would rather win like that, that final against Nadal in 2012 here was so defining and was so the making of him in many ways that he wants a taste of it again.
But this is the thing with Osaka and her win, and I think that this is what typically happens with these kind of things. You know, if somebody offered you the easy route, you'd take the easy route. But yeah, it means more, doesn't it, when you've had to go that route, that circuitous route, and uphill, ups and downs, and you still come out on top. I mean, what an achievement that is from Osaka.
And she can do it all, because we saw at the US Open the way she blitzed through the draw, winning in straight sets every single match apart from the Sabalenka match. And obviously the final there was sort of such a thing to come through, not in terms of the tennis, just dealing with the moment. Whereas here, what she's done is she was a set and 4-1 down to Sei Shuwei in the
fourth round, I think.
I think it was the third, and then Sevastova was the fourth.
Oh, yeah.
And then Svitolina.
Here she comes. At 12:10. Oh, no, not for a while. Osaka in the main interview room at
12:10. 10 past midnight, folks. That's when Naomi Osaka's coming into her press conference. I reckon she gets out of there at 3 a.m.
And I mean, everyone will be delighted to stay that long. And listen,
I'm not joking, because, I mean, how many interviews is she going to end up doing tonight?
She, you're right, though. But, you know, the point you make about Federer and players just wanting to win easily, she might not be in this position had she won easily against Sevastova or Su Weishei. I really think she's a better player than she was a week ago, and 2 weeks ago, and 3 weeks ago. I think the Shea match, the Sevastova match, and the Serenko match in Brisbane have been defining for her.
Yeah, because, you know, usually I think with most players, especially when they're not fully formed, like she's not the finished article yet. She's actually going to get better.
Yeah, watch out, folks.
Which is an incredible thought. But most players, there's a type of player, isn't there, that is going to be the one that messes them up. And, you know, whether it's Marat Safin and Fabrice Santoro, whoever it is, usually there's a player, isn't there? I can't really think of anybody who at the moment can make Naomi Osaka think, oh no. You know.
Well, I think she's played them in this tournament. I really do think it was Su Weishei and Sevastova, and the fact that she found a way through those matches, because they're players who don't feed her the power necessarily, and they give her different looks and you just slightly mess her up. And for her to have come through them, and then she got into the power players, and okay, she had, yeah, there were difficult matches against Pliskova and today against Kvitova, but she was kind of in charge of them as well. You know, she won the first set in both, and she just feels more comfortable against the power players. And there aren't a lot of Sei Shuwei and Sevastova's on tour, so there really aren't many.
Monica Niculescu, the David Law of the WTA.
Well, I'll tell you.
That is what they call her.
She'd have to get used to playing me. The match, I read something by Courtney Nguyen, I think a couple of days ago, that she'd asked both these two when the last time they played somebody with a match not on their racket.
That was fascinating.
And they both said Sabalenka at the US Open, because they both played Sabalenka, and Osaka managed to find a way to win that. Which is interesting, and I don't think it's particularly surprising to us, is it, because of the game that Sabalenka has got. But the future for Osaka is just going to be so interesting to watch on so many levels, because of her potential and her personality, because she, the interest level she provokes, the effect she has on people is immense, isn't it?
Well, another thing that Courtney asked Osaka after her semi-final victory that really stuck with me was she quoted Naomi back to her and said, I think it was a year or so ago, she was 72 in the world here a year ago. 72. She was all potential. Around about a year ago, certainly before she'd won Indian Wells or the US Open or anything, she said that if I'm good enough, I don't need the experience. I can win without experience if I'm good enough. And Courtney asked her, do you think you're winning here, you're getting to the final, is about just being good enough, or do you think now it's starting to be about experience? And she went, oh, good question.
I love the way she considers a question.
Yeah.
And she says, for me, at the start of every single answer.
Yeah, for me.
Very good.
And she was like, oh, yeah, actually, I do have a bit of experience now. And she was like, oh. And it was kind of like her moment of, wow, I'm really good, and now I have the experience under my belt. Like, wow, I've got it all. Wow. And, I mean, for me, oh, God,
you're doing it now.
Wow. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be Naomi Osaka.
Charlie Eccleshare says she has that intonation of voice like Alison, I think it is. Alison Hannigan, who plays the part of, I can't remember what her name is, in
Willow,
American Pie movies.
Oh, well, I'm showing my age because I think of her as Willow in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. I don't know who that is, but okay. I believe
you. Do you, Matt?
No.
Do you know, have you ever
I'm
heard of
Buffy? Straddling the generations
I've heard,
here.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. It was filmed before he was born. But anyway.
I really think it stands the test of time.
Okay.
Although I must say, I don't subscribe to that. I don't know. It's just because it was before I was born. Because I was very disappointed with Amanda Anisimova in this tournament, whose tennis I absolutely love. And she is from Freehold, New Jersey, home of Bruce Springsteen. And she said, Bruce who?
She hadn't heard of Bruce Springsteen. Like, his picture is probably up, like, in every... If Bruce Springsteen's from your small town...
I have never been more disappointed.
In a 16-year-old. Or anybody, for that matter.
Anyway.
So, where were we?
We digress. But
Naomi Osaka.
I mean... I can't remember what I was saying. But, yeah, but, I mean, now... I mean, she was brilliant before... Without the experience, like what is going to stop her now?
Well,
I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to fall into the Anisimova trap of saying, well, I can't see how she's ever going to lose tennis matches. but for me, something has changed in tennis tonight because I think there has been this sort of baseline default feeling in women's tennis that. Lots of people can be very, very good on their day, etc., etc. People might be able to beat Serena, but if and when Serena returns to her best and full fitness, Serena is still the best player in the world. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I think Serena can be better than she was in this tournament and against Pliskova. But I think Osaka... would beat current best Serena. I do. I think Osaka is the new baseline and benchmark in tennis, and that's a real shift, I think.
The most uncomfortable she looked was when she was giving her speech in the whole night, Naomi Osaka. I mean, it was still endearing. She's still lovely. But it was noticeable that when she wasn't asked questions and she'd got to give this sort of set piece speech, and she said, I'd looked at my notes beforehand, but now I've forgotten it all.
I mean, that is amazing that she admitted to having notes, yeah, isn't it? Because some people could do that. You know, and it could easily have got the reaction of, you know, Federer having the
eight embroidered,
having
already
the embroidered eight cardigan already on his cardigan.
Caroline Wozniacki asking for a Vogue cover.
Yeah, but you know, it just wasn't like that, was it? It was just adorable. She genuinely just doesn't believe in her power.
Yeah, you just know where she's coming from, really, as a human being.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just to say something on, you know, something further to back up what Catherine said, I genuinely feel like Naomi Osaka is the era defining player on either tour, men or women. She, for me, is the most significant, most important tennis player to have emerged since Marin Djokovic in that sort of 2006-2007-2008 period on the men's tour.
Because why?
Well, because of the impact she's already having, the fact that she's backed up a Grand Slam by winning the next one she's played. She's won 14 Grand Slam matches in a row now. That, you know, that feat of backing up your first slam by winning the next one has never happened in the Open era on the men's side, and hasn't happened since Jennifer Capriati in 2001 on the women's side.
Serena didn't do it. You know, it's hard to overstate that achievement. I think, you know, it just doesn't really happen.
It's immense, and also the way she plays, the way she is, how popular she is. She, you know, the tennis world is hers to, you know, hers to take over, really.
And none of it seems to affect her.
No.
It will be interesting to see whether it does in the future, given, I mean, her... I noticed and remarked upon her social media following after the US Open, the way it just took off, and the engagement. She only has to post hello on it and the place just goes bananas. And that's just going to multiply. She doesn't seem bothered in the slightest, really, so far at least. And I hope that stays the same, because it would be great to get somebody who just keeps on winning or keeps on being part of the top of the game for years and years to come, who doesn't hate the elements that can come with it.
But look at what she said in the speech tonight. Her whole speech, I don't think she mentioned winning the title or the trophy once. It was all about
being proud,
the match and the honour of being part of that match, that and playing with Kvitova for the first time.
Wasn't that
and
nice?
I know they all, it's, you know, it's a box check thing with those ticks, with those speeches. You congratulate your opponent. You can, now one of the boxes is you congratulate their team. You pay tribute to them, etc., etc. But that's not what she was doing. She barely acknowledged that she'd won the title. It was all about the honour of participating in that match. And she said, "I'm sorry, Petra, that our first ever match had to be a Grand Slam final," as if to say, I didn't want to deny you this Grand Slam title. Mm. I mean, it was all...
When she turned to Kvitova and said that to her, as opposed to kind of the way they sometimes do, they say it generically and, you know, ignore their opponent, really, that was lovely. And I thought, wow, what a moment. And Kvitova... The outpouring of emotion and just warmth towards her as well. I think one of the papers called this the feel-good final, and that was such a good way of putting it, wasn't it?
Yeah, Simon Briggs confirmed had something in his eye.
He did, didn't he? Yeah, we saw Simon a short while ago, and I mean, he's been bowled over by this story, and contrasting the two ceremonies that we've just seen as the biggest departure from one to another that you could possibly get from the US Open final to this, and he's absolutely right.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The men's final is coming, and it will take some living up to, won't it, in terms of the final we've just seen. But you've got, in Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal, two players who've played each other 52 times before, 27-25 in the favour of Djokovic. Albeit, and we talked about last night, Catherine, after Djokovic's match, the statement that he'd given in response to Nadal's statement victory. But then you look at the actual head-to-head between the two and the more recent record that they've got, 12 out of the last 15 won by Djokovic. It's quite a significant difference, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a slightly different Nadal.
It is,
as my brother describes it, as aggressive nutter Nadal, which I quite like.
He does come out and he does look like he's just been released from a cage.
He's ravenous, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like when they released those tigers in Gladiator. Yeah. It's a bit like that.
Yeah.
I still give the slight edge to Djokovic.
Do you?
But, I interviewed him earlier, and just as I did with Kvitova yesterday, and I'm so easily convinced by these people. I'm a sucker.
You mentioned the length of the match, of the last one, 5 hours and 53 minutes. Simon was talking to us earlier about how I think it was one of the first slams that he covered, or one of the first years he was correspondent, and there was, going into that, there was the Andy Murray and Ivan Lendl relationship had just started. There was a 4-hour epic with Djokovic and Murray, and then there was this, it felt like a massively significant match at the time, and it ended up being. I mean, I think it's one of the results that has helped Djokovic towards where he stands now on the heels of these other two greats of the game. If you can outlast Rafael Nadal over the best of five in a Grand Slam final, imagine the badge of honour that must be for you, for your ego, for your pride. There can be no greater achievement in tennis, I don't think, than being able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's why he wants it. He wants... His ideal scenario is winning in 5 sets and 6 hours again. He would obviously take winning in 3 sets and 2 hours over not winning, but I think he'd be prepared to gamble. If you offered him the options now in roulette style, I'd get the impression he'd gamble on a fifth set.
I mean, Roger Federer always says that, I would rather win in 3 nice easy sets, if that's all right, you know. But the actual memories are more special when they win it in the distance, I think, a lot of the time. But I also think there's probably in there just an acceptance from Djokovic. I think he's probably using the interviews in a way just to remind everybody that, I mean, the chances of him winning in straight sets are pretty remote, or either of them, because they are both such greats of the game. They're both so similar in many ways in terms of their ability to just duke it out from a baseline. And they're both, I would say, pretty much at the peak of their powers. So how could that be straight sex?
Well, I mean, and we thought the same today, and it's borne out. As it, I mean, it's just hard to see a scenario where it's straight sex. And I know it's a cliche that, you know, the best players want to test themselves against the best, but I got that impression from Nadal, from Djokovic today. I might have got the same impression from Nadal, but he did his interview in Spanish, and my Spanish isn't quite up to that.
Should have sent Grad Matin.
But yeah, I really got the impression that he wants to leave Melbourne, Djokovic, feeling like he's the very, you know, his peacock feathers raised and fluttering, and feeling like he is the best tennis player in the world without question. And the best way to do that is to play peak Rafael Nadal and to beat him in a physical contest.
Yeah, I mean, they both produced stratospheric levels of tennis, didn't they, in the semi-finals, and if they both bring that, it's really difficult to see how this, you know, how can this not be a brilliant match. The one stat I would add to this conversation is Djokovic has won his last 14 sets on hard court against Nadal.
Oh, that's
quite a lot, isn't it?
Mind-boggling.
Now, obviously, the eye test is that Nadal is playing different tennis on a hard court, more aggressive, shortening the rallies. I think his average rally length is under 4 in this tournament. And, you know, we think of Nadal as grinding it out, but he's just not doing that. He's going for the kill. He's, you know, he's, to quote Mary Carrillo, he's got his fangs on, hasn't he? And he's just ripping forehands, and he's upped his speed on his serve. So the big question is, will this new Nadal have more of an impact against Djokovic on a hard court? Because Djokovic on a hard court has shown, certainly in recent times, that his game can just disrupt Nadal.
The last set that Nadal won on a hard court, from what I can see, was at the US Open final in 2013. 6-1 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's been an absolute age. And I actually compare the tennis Nadal's playing now to more like the tennis he was playing at the US Open in 2010, where he was more aggressive. And he actually beat Djokovic in the final there, but that was before Djokovic had gone into the mode that he eventually went into in 2011 when he started winning everything. So I am backing Djokovic, but I'm very, very interested to see how this new Nadal hard court game copes. And if it doesn't cope, if he doesn't win the match, you know, what are his other options against Djokovic?
Yeah, well, I would go back to the Wimbledon final that we saw most recently, 10-8 in the fifth. I can't really imagine Nadal playing better than that. And, I mean, it could have gone either way, but he didn't win.
Roof, though. Roof.
Help, yeah. Djokovic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to go Djokovic in five.
I'm going to go Djokovic in five. And when he walked out of the interview room and he was de-rigging himself in the microphone, I said, oh, I'll see you at 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. Then he went, yeah, I guess so.
What are you going for?
Djokovic in four.
Djokovic in four.
Simon, for a match that's on a knife edge, we're all pretty much in certain agreement about what's going
to
happen.
It'd be such a small shift for it to go the other way.
Can I leave you with the words of Ivan Lendl about what's going to happen in what I can only term as the worst interview of all time that I did this morning? Whoever wins the last point.
Thanks, Ivan.
We'll win.
Very helpful.
And I pressed him on it. He said, are you seriously asking me on the TV what will happen? I said, yeah. It's a TV interview, Ivan. That is precisely what I'm paid to do.
It is. So, right. Well, we know what we think. Clara Torsen has won the women's juniors, or the girls' juniors, tournament. Well done, her, from Denmark. And your young man, who you've been following and blogged about yesterday, how am I saying this? Lorenzo...
Do it in an accent, David.
Lorenzo Mazzetti.
Perfect.
Yeah, he's the one you blogged about. He's the one you blogged about. So... and you went and watched his semi-final yesterday. You gave your scouting report in your blog. We were trying to work out whether it's possible to predict the future. Is this the next whatever, a big name or not. He won today, 14-12 in a third set tiebreak.
Yeah, it was a more successful, you know, adventure out to watch someone who I didn't know a huge amount about than it was earlier in the tournament with Kuzmova.
That seems like a long time ago.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. But yeah, what a great match. I said in the blog that this Mazzetti guy is very watchable, and seeing it from a bit more of a distance up on the Rod Laver Arena, which, by the way, I think is really nice that they let them play on the Rod Laver Arena for the final, partly because the Margaret Court Arena today was being used for Fortnite.
It's being used for,
I don't even know what
gaming.
For gaming.
Mm. And some tomorrow.
They put out a press release saying that some of the world's top famous gamers that all have completely ridiculous names will be featuring. And I've never felt so out of touch with the world than when I read that press release.
I haven't really understood much of the last minute, to be honest. Okay.
But yeah, just to say on this match, what a great match, particularly, as you mentioned, with that final set tiebreak to 10. There was a moment where Mazzetti thought he'd won it after he'd hit an ace on a second serve, and then it was challenged, and it was actually just a millimetre out. And then he had to save a match point of his own, and he eventually went on to win it 14-12. And there was a moment where I thought, because in the semi-final that I'd watched, he was very relaxed, he was in control, whereas today he was really under pressure from his American opponent. And there was a moment where I thought, oh, is Mazzetti a little bit too Italian? It was...
In the way that Mary found the French too French.
Yeah.
What are we like? What would be too British?
We have the...
Yeah.
We are all
painfully British.
Would we be looking
national
up at the weather or something?
Are a thing.
Well, we'd be sort of plucky, wouldn't we? And not end up delivering. It's kind of the stereotype.
Asking what the weather's doing.
But Mazzetti was sort of cursing the world when things were going against him, and just ranting and raving in his box. And there's an interesting coaching rule in the juniors where if you're down the same end as your coach, you can talk freely with your coach. So he was doing that a lot. And if you're down the other end...
Wrong and down, can you talk with your opponent's coach
You can just get hand signals.
Right.
So that's quite an interesting rule in the juniors. And I believe it's a Tennis Australia initiative. So he was, you know, he was really letting the occasion not exactly get to him, but he was kind of ranting and venting a little bit, but he never lost his focus, which was impressive.
I can name some of the celebrity gamers.
No, you're all right.
Loser Fruit. Mr. Fresh Asian, all one word. Dr. Lupo, all one word. 11:30 a.m. tomorrow on the Rod Laver Arena.
Were they like...
Margaret Court Arena. Interview opportunities are available.
Do they get dressed up as tennis players and have rackets? But
500 of Australia's top Fortnite gamers will compete in qualifying on Saturday.
That was today.
Yes.
Do they bring
the chance to play for a share, David, of $400,000 in prize money on Sunday.
What were those names again?
$400,000.
Right. Where can I get this game?
No one's giving me
hundreds of thousands of dollars
for being
out there. They have
for being nifty at Mario Kart. Why is that not getting noticed?
No, I don't know.
They have a Fortnite station.
Yeah. Do they?
I'm an unrecognised talent.
The ground.
Think I'd be good at it?
I think possibly anyone could be good at it.
Can I ask, what were those names again? Dr. Lupo or
something? Dr. Lupo.
Right.
Mr. Fresh Asian.
Were the
answers on a postcard. What would David Law's gaming name be?
Yeah, come on. At Tennis Podcast. Answers on a postcard. I mean, you think we're going to be taken seriously by the Fortnite crew when you're asking for answers on a postcard? At Tennis Podcast, if you'd like to give me my gaming name for Fortnite or whatever that is. Anyway, let's just end this podcast with that. It's been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com. Our mascot is Rio the dog, Rio with a Y. Thank goodness for Rio with a Y and not this Fortnite nonsense. We're going to be back with the men's singles final. Tennis podcast, the final one we're going to be bringing you from Melbourne in 2019. Grant Matt, who's going to tell us all about this this gaming stuff after this show, because he's young enough to understand it. Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.